This is CliffCentral.com.
The flight's departure was 9 minutes behind schedule, but who's complaining? After all, South Africa has one of the best departure and on-time ratings anywhere in the world. Take a few flights in America and you'll quickly see what I mean. I could have been 15 minutes behind and I would still get to Cape Town by 8:10 p.m., which would be plenty of time to make my scheduled knowledge call with an icon. On the two-hour flight between Joburg and Cape Town, I typically listen to podcasts. This makes the time fly by. Excuse the pun. But on this flight, I put my headphones on, pretending to be occupied, so I could zone out and think about the importance of the call that would ensue. While doing so, I nodded off and I was ultimately woken up by the flight stewardess asking me to remove my headphone because it was time to land. I snapped out of it and looked at my watch and it was 7:55 p.m. I braced myself, hoping once we landed, we would taxi straight to the terminal and not sit on the tarmac and have to get shuttled to the arrivals center. Guess Mr. Murphy and his law. Murphy's law is a real thing because the captain not only took forever to park, but when he did, you guessed it, we weren't near the terminal. We would need a shuttle. I was seated near the back. As passengers began to disembark, I looked down at my watch and it was 8:27 p.m. When 8:30 p.m. hit, I was just about to step off the plane. I looked at the flight attendant and told her, I have to make a call to America to speak to Russell Simmons, and it's the only time I can do it right now, so I do not have time to get to the terminal. She said in a concerned reply, I don't mind if you stay on the plane, but you're going to miss the shuttle. How will you get to the terminal? I said, look, we'll make a plan. I whipped out my phone, iPad and microphone, which will be all I needed to make and record the call. The number I was given by the conference host, which will be hosting Mr. Simmons for the Liberty VUCA Knowledge Summit, had to be an agency call. So when I began dialing, I was expecting a PA. But in fact, Russell Simmons picked up. And although he and I had never spoken, his voice was exactly the common voice I expected. He said, hi, it's Russell. My throat dropped. My heart pounded. The attendant motioned for me to hurry. So I said, hi, Uncle Rush. I'm Timothy Maurice. And we have a call scheduled. He says, oh, yes, yes, okay. But I'm in a serious appointment right now. But let me try to answer your questions. We began the call. The attendant continued to press on my neck. And this time, she said, the cleaners must enter the plane and your shuttle has left, sir. As she was saying this, Russell's line was breaking. I was struggling to hear him. But then it cleared up. He says, look, I would like to get to a quiet place so we can do this call properly. Can you call me back in 10 minutes? A feeling of overwhelming joy came over me. I jumped off the plane with my only luggage, my carry-on, caught a ride with a driver from the cleaning crew and headed to the terminal, ran to the car rentals where I got into my rental after checking in and signing up for my car, phoned Mr. Russell back from the front seat of my rental car at 9:05 p.m. Welcome back to the next episode of the Brain and Brand Show, where we explore the intersection of the human and brand behavior experience, how brands impact people's psychology, and how people can influence their stories and brands. The following is a very special episode where the call gets rather emotional, but as I sit in the front of the rental car, overwhelmed that it all worked out so perfectly, I still can't believe I'm speaking to a child hero of mine, Russell Simmons, the man himself, the chairman and CEO of Rush Communications, co-founder of Def Jam Recordings, the label that included and trust artists such as Kanye West, Leona Lewis, Big Sean, LL Cool J, co-founded in 1983 by Russell Simmons. He also co-produced The Nutty Professor starring Eddie Murphy. He co-founded The Rush Card, founded the Diamond Empowerment Fund. Simmons has been a vegan since 1999 and an extraordinary humanitarian. Enjoy our chat.
Keeping it real. on CliffCentral.com.
I mean, I like to give back everywhere I can. I think that that's my purpose. All of us are servants, and all of us should be spending as much energy as we can giving back. But and giving and getting are the same thing reversed. So every process, every business, everything you have, you should believe it has a benefit to humankind, or whether even if it's just comedy, it makes people laugh. Even if it's just music, it makes people happy. But if it's philanthropic, social, political work that you think benefits the greater good, then you should do that as well. So all of this is one process. All of it's giving. And I choose, if I have to make a choice, I try to be people of color because of the burden that we've been under for so many years, especially as Americans, we know, and as our South Africans, you know what we've been through.
Yeah. When you think back to when you were a child growing up with your brothers, did you have an idea that the 60-year-old Uncle Rush would be where he is? And what do you think attributed to help you getting to this point?
A lot of luck. And, you know, when you find what's right, it inspires you to do it. So you keep doing it. It was not, you know, selfishly, I followed the path of giving. And giving promotes receiving, and the cycle of giving sped up. And so more things I gave that people liked, the more times I would have what they call, quote-unquote, success in the real world. It happened at those kinds of things I was giving, the things that gain this stuff, this accolade, which is small, but the small thing that we got from it, the accolade, turned into big things when you use that kind of social, media and power and relationships. When you have this kind of admiration or luck from and people willing to work for you, then you should use it for good. So other words, celebrity has a value. And once you recognize its value, you should continue to use it to benefit the lives of others.
You know, this idea of VUCA and this entire summit by Liberty is about literally helping to wake people up to the potential of knowledge and curiosity. When did you wake up to the potential and the power of yoga and meditation?
Four years ago, I started to practice. But, you know, we all have this in us. Every single one of us wants yoga. There is no human being or animal on the planet that doesn't want bliss or an awakened state. All of us want to see God in all things, including struggle. This is what the state of yoga is. And so the more you practice it, the more you practice the principles, which are the same as what, you know, the idea of a state of yoga is no different from a state of Christ consciousness, or nirvana for Buddhists, or taqwa for Muslims. This idea that you can move more towards an awakened, happy state and away from a noisy mind, suffering state, it's just black and white. You know, when you realize that that piece of truth is core to your growth, your spiritual growth is just you growing towards the self. Life's journey is to the self. And when you know the self, you know this freedom from the noise and the suffering I refer to. So I guess, you know, in early yoga practices, you know, you read these scriptures, the Yoga Sutras and the Bhagavad Gita and these scriptures, and you say, oh, that is true. It's like when a preacher says something, it rings a bell. It's true sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
What the imam says, it makes sense. You know, so I know that's true. But you don't believe it enough to do it. If you have total faith in these ideas, you'll do them all the time. So me still suffering with delusional, you know, shortcuts and all the other things that separate you from these ideas, I at least have more faith in them today than I did before. And they help me and guide me, and they can help and guide anyone. No one is exempt from these rules. No one. You know, you can seem to escape them, but in the long run, you come home. These truths are unbreakable, and they're taught by every prophet in different languages, in different parts of the world. They're different colors, but it's the same truth over and over. So when you embrace the truth and you work because you know it, then you work even greater when you have total faith in it. And you have total faith in it, that's what enlightenment is. And that's something that's still attainable, but not, you know, you know that you're happier because you follow these truths, which is moving towards enlightenment more often. You're more happier more often because you embrace these ideas. So you know to keep using them, keep you know, it speeds up your evolution towards the self.
When someone comes to you with an idea, like Walter Latham, or anyone comes with an idea, how do you balance between your understanding of basic business principles and your spiritual understanding in terms of how you decide whether or not to strike a partnership with someone?
If it's fun and inspiring and uplifting for people, then I want to do it. If it's not, then I don't. But if it's fun and inspiring and uplifting for people and it feels like it's a, you know, going to build up a cycle of more and more giving, which means success, then it's, you know, it's exciting. If it's something that obviously, you know, it's really great for people, but no one will ever see it or never get, you know, you have to, there's numbers and there's business to see how these ideas will play out. And you have to have faith in them, or sometimes the numbers defy, you know, your faith in the idea. If you have an idea that no one's ever heard of, there's no numbers you can put to that. You just have to get your instinct and just go with the process.
Wow. You know, one of the things that I often, when companies are giving back and making a difference, like when you were, you know, when you were giving back to Cedar City Campus, there were line upon line of impact made that you may not be aware of. I'll give you a good example quickly. There's a young girl that was mentored by a student from Cedar City Campus that was, we were able to go through a mentoring program because of your funding. This young girl made it into the Oprah Academy, and now she's about to graduate from UCT in coding. Do you think it's important for brands to track the impact that they're making? Because there's no way for you to know that your investment has over the years produced a 10-year-old girl who was mentored by a CETA student who's now graduated from Oprah Academy, who's now also about to get her coding engineering degree. Is it important to track that?
Well, you always want to analyze what you invest in. It's not just for a lot of corporations, I think, are concerned with the bang for the buck. In other words, their investment in philanthropic, social, and even sometimes political action is what will they get from their community, what emotional attachment will they get to the consumers, and, you know, not necessarily how effective is the program. It's very important to know how effective the program is, of course, and if you're a genuine giver, and you're giving because you want to make a difference. So yes, at the Rush program in New York, for instance, I had an intern who now runs the program, and I'm happy to see her there. But we do follow our students.
Wow.
I think the programs that you build that help people, you should be able to, you know, be very crystal clear on how good you are to the community and how you're using the money that you're raising.
One of the second times that I engaged, you sent a few ambassadors from the Diamond Empowerment Fund. The first time I met Kim Kardashian, you had sent them there. Your ability to use celebrity to raise awareness for good causes is something I really admire. What are some lessons that you've learned from being able to use people who have influence that are often not necessarily seen connected to the cause, but you leverage their influence, like in the case with sending Kim to South Africa? Is there any takeaway, any lesson we can learn from that?
We need to not judge so much what people, you know, people are quick to judge them. So how could you get Kim Kardashian involved in something she wears fur? Well, everybody's got different stages of their development. You know, I mean, I'm an animal rights person, but I don't write somebody off because they don't see what I see.
Wow. That's very clear.
You know, there's some things, everybody has flaws, everybody has struggle. And some of us, you know, some of us have more. You know, some of us have more to give that is not necessarily connected to, the, you know, what we can see on the surface. Of course, she shut down the I Am Muslim for a Day rally by tweeting she was Muslim, and what did that turn into? But Congress shutting down, and they stopped inquiring these McCarthy-esque kind of inquiries into the Muslim population in America. It was a very big deal. We had a march. We worked hard. We put on the cover of the paper, but it didn't get nearly as big as her tweet.
Wow. That's powerful. Uncle Rush, I want to know just quickly as we move to a close, because I know you need to go. You know, in terms of defining a leader that has the sort of backbone to tackle some of these global challenges, you know, when it comes to dealing with, you know, the issues that America is dealing with, issues that South Africa is dealing with politically, you know, there will always be issues that can bring out the best in us. What are a couple of traits that you believe leaders need to tackle some of these really complex global issues?
What skills do leaders need to tackle them?
Yes, the skills or any sort of principles, beliefs, values, etc., to be able to confront and deal with these issues.
Make your mantra to give what you want to receive. Give others what you want for yourself. Make that your daily mantra. And know that that's how you should build a business. That's something that you love, that you think is valuable and useful. Give that. Sell that if you have to. But make that your business and your life.
Wow. Just quickly, any difficult moment you faced and what you did to rebound from that difficult moment? Just one thing that you did to rebound from a very difficult moment that we can learn from.
Confront head on the struggle you come to as much as you can. Example, when my guys made a mistake and the rush card crashed, I immediately started to call customers and to do a video for the customers and to get in front of it as opposed to hiding. All my publicists and everybody said, all my business strategists said, don't get in the middle of it. And I had to be the first one in the front of it, never mind the middle. I think that that's the advice that I would give, but that's, you know, own up to whatever it is that you're responsible for and try to do the best you can with what you have.
Wow.
As the call ends, I sat for another 4 to 5 minutes. A tear came down my right eye. It was now 9:30 p.m. I phoned the hotel and told them I was coming. Then put the key in the ignition, sat for a few more minutes, and then took off and headed to Sea Point to get some rest before my next talk the next morning. Thanks, Uncle Rush. Thanks for your entrepreneurial, cultural, and spiritual journey. I appreciate you joining us on the Brain and Brand Show. Join us next week for the next episode of the Brain and Brand Show. Please continue to subscribe and share with everyone who you think will appreciate the neuroscience and the psychology of brain and branding.
This is CliffCentral.com.